we'll actually see prices fall below where they were a year ago. And that's the first time you can make that statement since late October 2009.
Wide variance in hospital charges for the same procedure found in a new study in the journal Archives of Internal Medicine. Lead author, UC San Francisco Dr. Renee Shaw, says the average cost for an appendectomy is $33,000.
That's more than half of the average income for Americans. And so if you get sick once and you have appendicitis,
you could be bankrupt, she says. This is ABC News.
Meineke's Personal Pricing on Brakes presents Billy Joe's personal Meineke jingle.
My beautiful wife, she left me with the pickup truck and bad brakes. No money in my leather wallet. Dang, now I'm gonna be late. With personal pricing on brakes, I got a deal I really like. Meineke really set me back on the road to a blissful life.
Meineke's Personal Pricing on Brakes, the right service for the right price.
My money, my choice, my Meineke.
When I entertain, I do it right, thanks to Sam's Club.
Try us free and shop with no upcharge at the Spring Taste of Sam's Club open house.
I taste ahead of time, so I know it'll be a hit. And who doesn't love free samples?
Fresh meat, seafood, and more delicious items to prepare your spring
to perfection.
Not a member? Join at the Spring Taste of Sam's Club April 27th through 29th, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Be one of the first 800 members to sign up for emails from Sam's Club and get a free cookbook.
I do a little bit of everything. I do some singing, some dancing.
I'm a patriot. I love this country.
We're talking about the fun he's having on his show.
You enjoy it. You get a kick out of it.
What's the secret? How does he do it?
Helen, are you ready?
Thank you. Go Dodgers. Go Ducks.
Hey.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody.
Put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Look at me.
Every day, Coach Ron Tunick talks about the internet, careers, wine, food, and style, real estate, construction, and financial stuff. It's time for Driving Home with a Coach in the Business of Life on AM 1400 KKZZ. Now, here's the coach, Ron Tunick.
Welcome back to Water Cooler Monday. And what a first hour it's been. We had an incredible storyteller, Margaret. Jackie Carpenter, a compelling story about her son who murdered workers stealing copper out of his houses, and how she turned to reading Psalms and believed in miracles, and sure enough there was a miracle because the jury acquitted her son anyway, he walked, right?
Margaret? Yes, he did get off. Yep.
He walked.
Understand. I'd like to read the book, though, and I'd like to know what was the jury thinking, what was the evidence. The father-in-law must have testified, of course, being a former prosecutor. I want to know exactly what went on in the courtroom.
Yeah, the book is called The Bridge. That was the first half an hour. Second half an hour, Andy Feld
wrote
a book
too.
Called We're Tipping
yeah.
Over. And his book really got me excited,
yep.
as you heard, because I just don't understand the apathy of the public. I just don't get it. And if we don't figure out how to get involved in our political system, in our communities, it starts in our communities. People leave it up to their neighbors, and their neighbors aren't doing anything. We tend to leave government up to everybody else, and guess what? Here's what we have. So
it also starts, Coach, with parents. I'm the mother of three. I think it starts with parents teaching their children at a young age that this is a competitive world. Not everybody gets a trophy, and this is the real life. So I try to tell them what I'm doing as an author, and they see how much work I put in on all these books. They see the radio shows and how you have to build your own platform, and you really have to work hard for yourself. So I think it's important for parents to really push their kids to be competitive and do the best they can possibly do.
Amen. Well said. Now coming up in this half an hour, we're going to talk about on Water Cooler Monday, Margaret McLean and the coach. Margaret's new book, Under Oath, will be in bookstores and Amazon and everywhere tomorrow. She's a best-selling author, ex-prosecutor for the state of Massachusetts, currently full-time professor at Boston College. And this half an hour is an interesting subject. We're going to be talking about character, the greatness of character, Where does character play, Margaret, you think, in our daily lives? You have a lot of it. I mean, I've tried many ways to sneak around, to get you to fib, lie, cheat, steal. You won't have any of it. You won't have any of it. So character, I'm going to ask my guest, are you born with it or can you acquire it? Let me welcome him to the show here in Southern California. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly, David Lappin, Lapin?
That's correct, Coach Lappin.
Lappin, great. And what country are you from, sir?
I'm from South Africa originally, been in the United States for about 15 years now.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Wow, welcome.
Thank you, Margaret. Are you like our country?
I love it, yes, absolutely.
Well, good. I'm glad you're here, and I'm sure you're paying your taxes and being a good citizen.
Where are you from now? Where do you live now? Sorry, Coach, I'm curious. Where did you relocate to?
In Los Angeles, Margaret. We emigrated to Los Angeles. I spent two and a half years in Toronto. But back in Los Angeles now.
Excellent.
I
welcome.
I like the way he says that, Los Angeles.
Me too. I love his accent.
Is being a good citizen part of
If you love the accent so much, I don't have to worry about what I say. You can just listen to the accent.
I love it.
Oh, I will. I will. I will. I could just listen to it all night long.
Thank you.
David, is being a good citizen part of the character issue?
I think it is. I think being a citizen is an outcome of character. I don't think it's all that there is to character. Your question right at the beginning, is it something one's born with or is it something one can develop? And I think character is like physical muscles. We all have muscles, and we can all work out at the gym and get a little stronger than we are and a little bit more fit than we are, or a lot more fit than we are. It doesn't mean we can all become world champions. So each of us has character. We're born with character. We're raised with character. We just don't always bring it, particularly to work. And a lot of the work that I've done and certainly the focus of the book is business and organizational leadership. And we tend to think that character doesn't have such a role to play there, that business is about rules and laws and following the rules. But it's about a whole lot more than that. And we try to demonstrate the correlation between character and success.
It's such an interesting subject for an older gentleman like myself, and Margaret's a young woman, but, you know, character was a part of growing up in the 50s. I mean, etiquette was talked about in the classroom, being a gentleman, being a lady, all the things, telling the truth was emphasized, not lying was emphasized, all these things that are part of character were emphasized. I'm not sure anymore, maybe I'm wrong on this, but my son's a school teacher. We talk about character, and he's got 36 kids in his class, Dave, and he tells me all he does is babysit.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Coach. And I mean, I've heard teachers say they're afraid to talk about character because parents will threaten to sue them for imposing their values on their children.
As if it's a religious topic, correct?
People start becoming very weird about these things. And then we start treading very, very cautiously. I'm sure that when you were growing up, if you did something in the neighborhood and somebody, your friend's parents saw it, they might step in and have a word with you. Today, we would be terrified to have a rough word with a child that isn't our own. We're even scared of our own children.
You're absolutely right.
Isn't that something what he just said, David?
That's true.
So interesting that, are we afraid that there's going to be we're accused of? Yeah, I mean it's unbelievable.
I believe sometimes it's the parents' fault for thinking that their son or daughter can do no wrong. I see that all the time. So you're afraid to step in, or when you do step in, you get the phone call from the other parents. So I think the parents are to blame here.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
We see a whole lot of that. And you see it in all the professions. Doctors afraid of their patients. Mm-hmm. Teachers afraid of their students. Law enforcement officials afraid of the public. Presidents afraid of the media. The fear comes from bottom up. And that really gets in the way of leadership. We're talking about character, needs an enormous amount of leadership character to set that fear aside and do what's right and stand by what's right and take a lead. One of my clients said recently, your very point about how these words used to be talked about, one of my clients said, you know, when we were growing up, the word honor was a word that was used a lot. And now you hear the word respect and dignity, and it's used in terms of me. You have hurt my dignity, or you've assaulted my dignity, or you've acted disrespectfully towards me. But the idea of acting honorably is something we don't talk about a lot.
Yeah, well said. Right. We're talking to David Lappin, everybody. Greatness of character. How do you go about in 2012 writing a book on character? What possessed you to write a book?
Such a good question. That's a great question. Well, it's really been my life's work. It's starting out looking at the correlation between between character and success. I was trained as a rabbi, and I thought there's no point about teaching about character in synagogue or church or mosques, places of worship. Those guys have kind of got the plot. The place where the rubber really hits the road is business, where there's a cost to character, where you can lose a lot of money by standing up for what's right. And I was just curious, what happens when people show character in business? How does that express itself in results? Does it damage results? Is it irrelevant to results, or does it enhance results? And I started doing quite a lot of research around that, certainly in preparation for the book. I interviewed CEOs of very fast-growing companies that had sustained their growth over several years and looked for what were the common characteristics that they attributed their success to, and found it wasn't competence, and it wasn't training, and it wasn't skills, and it wasn't... Not one of them said that they attribute their success to what they learned on their MBA course at some Ivy League university. Every one of them attributed their success to issues of character that they'd learned from their parents or some other great mentors. And I thought, that's so interesting. Here we are training business leaders with skills and competencies, which are useful and which one can easily pick up, and not really developing people for character and for greatness. And that's what really got me interested in the topic.
Character requires patience. If you're talking about character in business, it takes time to build respect. It takes time to build trust. In a fast-paced society where technology and Twitter and all this stuff is a part of some of our lives, it's very difficult to understand patience and where a character comes in. Let's take a quick break. It's a very interesting subject because, Margaret, I think you're a person of great integrity and a great character, and I think true success is not money. I don't think true success has anything to do about money. I think winning in life and winning, I think character plays a great role. I don't think, David and Margaret, and let me ask this question, then both of you can answer when we come back from break. Can you really build lasting relationships without demonstrating character? We'll find out the answer on Water Cooler Monday on the show we call The Business Life, live here in Southern California. We're live every day from 4 to 6, Monday through Friday. You can find us on AM 1400 Coach. We have, we have one or two people that listen online. We've got one or two people that listen on their TuneIn Radio app. We're a TuneIn Radio station. It's a great app. David, if you've got an iPhone or a Droid, you can listen to us on the app called TuneIn Radio. Our show brought to you by Yolanda's, by Bunnin, by Troop Real Estate, and my new sponsor, Roar. Go to roar.pro. If you own a business, you might want an app. You might want an app. You don't have to spend $10,000 on an app. For $500, you can be just like the big boys. Check them out, roar.pro. We'll be right back on the show we call The Business of Life.
And checking out the drive, let's see what's going on there. And it's a real light drive today, very easy. Let's call the 101 from Westlake Village all the way up to Santa Barbara, looking pretty clean if you're north. If you're going southbound, a little slowing once you hit the 1, and that'll take you around 30 miles per hour through to Rice, but then you're good to go up and over the grade. The 23 is fantastic, great drive from the 101 out to Moore Park and all the way back. 126 also looking good from Fillmore to Santa Clarita and Fillmore down to the beach. 33 in and out of Ojai, also a nice drive. So you do drive home with a coach on AM 1400, KKZZ.
Everyone's running to Bunnin.
Hey, Ventura County, who do you think of first when you want to buy a pre-owned car or truck? Think Bunnin, of course. We've been an industry leader in used car sales since we first arrived here 15 years ago. We specialize in hard-to-find makes and models, and our volume selling keeps our pricing low, with hundreds of vehicles ready to go right now. So buying used? Buy Bunnin. Check us out at Bunnin.com, or come for a test drive today at a Bunnin location near you. Bunnin Auto Outlet in the Ventura Auto Center, Bunnin Buick GMC and Bunnin Cadillac in the Oxnard Auto Center, and our newest Bunnin location, Bunnin Chevrolet in Culver City. Make your first stop your only stop for quality used cars with huge discounts you've come to expect from Bunnin. Just remember our famous jingle.
Everyone. Yolanda's Mexican Cafe has been serving Ventura County the finest in Mexican food and drink for 25 years. Visit one of their four family-friendly locations in Oxnard at 1601 South Victoria Avenue, Ventura at 2753 East Main Street, Camarillo at 86 Daly Drive, and in Simi Valley at 590 East Los Angeles Avenue. They've been voted the best margaritas, best happy hour, best Mexican food, and best salsa bar in Ventura County in a survey by the Ventura Star newspaper and the Reporter News magazine over the last 10 years. Each one of their restaurants has its own personality, with beautiful decor and also beautiful artwork. Yolanda's friendly staff is always available to assist in providing an enjoyable experience when you dine with them. Yolanda's has been serving their customers the finest Mexican food since February 1982. Please visit their website at yolandasmexicancafe.com to see the many menu choices. Come share in the experience of Yolanda's Mexican Cafe, the best Mexican restaurant in Ventura County, Yolanda's.
Hi, it's Kim, and I want to invite you to listen to my show, The Kim Pagano Show.
Join us weekday mornings at 8 to listen to The Kim Pagano Show. Kim talks about everything from beauty and health to giving you tips and tricks for living a beautiful and passionate lifestyle. We interview experts from an array of industries and talk about their personal journeys about marriage, finances, kids, recipes, fitness, and everything in between, adding value every day in every way. Kim's a hair therapist and a mother of four, and so much more. You can tune in. Call in. Mondays through Fridays from 8 to 9 a.m. and again in the afternoons from 3 to 4 p.m. Get your daily dose of Kim on The Kim Pagano Show, right here on AM 1400 KKZZ.
This is my business.
And now, back to America's business coach, Coach Ron Tunick.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the show. We call the business of life. My microphone's working better now. Thank you, my dear friend Joe Messina. Joe's on every day. He's just a wonderful young man, isn't he, Margaret?
He is. So what did he do? He came over and
my studio.
No, he turned the microphone on, Coach.
No,
I know he did. I'm going to find out the truth.
I'm dopey, but not that dopey. Mm-hmm. All right, you're listening to Coach Margaret McLean, best-selling author, professor at Boston College, ex-prosecutor for the state of Massachusetts, and one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. She's on every week. Her show on Thursdays at 1 o'clock called It's a Crime is very interesting because Margaret's style, when I'm not over-talking on her, she tells a nice story. She finds, what do you find, cases and expand on them? Is that what you do?
Yeah, I take hot topics in the law, real cases, real crime. This week we're going to talk about e-books and price fixing and collusion, and I have a best-selling best-selling thriller author, Barry Eisler, coming on, William Martin. I'm a Macmillan author. They're my publisher. So Macmillan and Apple and Penguin are the only ones that didn't settle with the government for this e-book price fixing case, and of course Amazon's on the other side, so I've got both sides of the issue.
Like
and how
to call
the
in.
Industry
like
is
to
really
call in
yeah please
rant,
do
and rant
and good rant.
But all right, welcome back, David Lappin. He wrote a book called Greatness of Character, and ladies and gentlemen, this is a big subject. Character is a big subject. I think our politicians are lacking character because they don't tell us the truth. Our government lacks care. Well, my God, do I need to say any more? GSA. Do I need to say anything?
All the men in the big prostitution scandal this week. The Secret Service guys. What's up with that?
Well,
what do you think, David?
Yeah. So, David, answer my question before I went to break.
Can you build sustainable relationships without character? No, definitely not, because the thing that gets in the way of sustainable relationships is mistrust and the fear of exploitation. And so we hold back and we're defensive and we don't expose ourselves to people we don't trust. So trust is the absolute precondition of any kind of worthwhile and sustainable relationship. And there's no way you can build trust unless you've demonstrated character. You can't even just talk about it. You actually need to have demonstrated character. And I think that means having put others before yourself, having paid a price to do what's right, doing what's inconvenient just because it's right. When you see people doing that, that's when you build trust.
And I think you can do it one person at a time. I think instead of trying to be everybody's friend and solve all the world's problems, I think you can find one human being, and that's how you can start to change your life and change somebody else's life, by showing your character, reaching out, just what you said, David, reaching out to them and making a difference in their lives by using character. So what is character? Can you define character, please?
That's a good question. The way that I like to define character is a person is able to master their... Let me give you two sides to the definition, and I think they work together. The one is a person is able to master their defensiveness, to choose not to become defensive, to choose not to react in an instinctual way, but to react in a correct way, in a considered way, is the one area of character. And I think the other area of character is just the willingness to put the interests of others before one's own.
There's a clear, Margaret, you know this, being an ex-prosecutor, there is a clear line between right and wrong. Yes or no on that, Margaret?
I think so. A lot of people think there's a lot of gray area, and it's not just black and white.
Mm-hmm. And I think this gray area is really what's causing our country harm right now, that there is a right way to do things. There's also a wrong way to do things. And I think people try to cut corners, they try to play games. It doesn't work because, David, doesn't character really reveal itself?
Absolutely it does. It reveals itself as soon as the going gets a little tough. And the prize for cutting corners, as you say, the prize for acting out of character is high. That's when we really see who are the people with character.
I'd love to spend an hour on this subject. I do a show on KVTA on the weekends. Maybe we should do a whole hour on character, because I think even when people are down on their luck, even when things aren't going right, this is when true character comes out. When everybody else is walking out of your life, when things are going crappy, I think that's where you. If you have character, you've developed over time, as you say, because it takes a while. Doesn't it take a lifetime to get character?
Well, I don't know, Coach. I think that it's each situation offers an opportunity, and that's kind of every minute of every day. It accumulates, and one builds the strength, and one builds reputation over a period of time. And I think we are living in a much faster time. But even in the area of character, things can happen faster because things are exposed that much more quickly. If you look at some of the news scandals, these are things that years ago nobody would have known about, or it would have taken years to come out. Now it happens very quickly. And when people do great things, that also gets known. Perhaps not as quickly, but it gets known too, and it goes wide.
If somebody's interested and want to find you, your website is?
The best website to go to is leadbygreatness.com, which is the name of the book, Lead by Greatness. And we have a leadbygreatness.com website with a whole lot of information and blogs and articles and so on.
Lead by Greatness. And you write this book, Lead by Greatness. What did you personally take away from writing this book in your quiet moments? What did you take away?
Quite a number of interesting things. Because one of the things there is what I call designing, mapping your own spiritual fingerprint, which is who you really are, what determines the choices you make and the decisions you make, and how are they different from others. And when I saw mine, I was quite shocked, and I wasn't altogether happy with it. And it led me onto a journey of working on it to actually change things about my character that I didn't like. And that was hard work. That was really hard and painful work and took a long, long time.
I want to have you back make a note. When you come back, I want to talk about how you can actually change. Can you change your character? Can you, David?
Obviously, you can't become somebody that you're not. But if there are parts of your character that are weak, if there are parts of your character that are undeveloped, you can definitely develop those parts and strengthen them, and in that way change.
We're all flawed in some ways, I'm glad to hear that you say that we can work on those flaws, which will eventually improve our character. Also, when you come back, I want to. Did you become a rabbi? You said you got trained, but did you ever become a rabbi?
I did, Kirsch. I never earned my living that way. I practiced as a rabbi and taught and guided people for many years and built a community. But I always earned my living in business and operated in both areas simultaneously.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with the profession of the rabbi because it takes so many years, so much hard work. It's not the easiest profession to become. So I always have a great deal of respect for people that become rabbis. David, thanks for coming to Southern California. Thanks for coming to our show. We call the Business Life Water Cooler Monday with Margaret McClain.
Thank you.
And the coach. David will be back. It's an interesting subject. Lead by Greatness is the title of his book. We're going to do the Patriot Minute. And then Margaret and I have a number of things that we want to talk about, a number of things. We always do a discussion of 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes had a couple of very interesting things last night, didn't they, Margaret?
They did.
They did.
All those emeralds were interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. All right, so the Patriot Minute brought to you by Roar. Go to roar.pro. If you own a business and you're thinking about improving your brand, building your brand, expanding your brand, I can't think of a better thing to do today because 100 million people have smartphones, and one of the first things they do is they go to the app and they pull up an app. So if you have a business or a service or want to communicate, Margaret, you need to have an app.
I do. That sounds very interesting. I'm going to look it up right when I get off the radio tonight.
I'll get you the family deal at roar.pro. Go to roar.pro.
Oh, I like it.
Huh?
I like the family deal.
I'll
friends
get you
and family.
The family deal at roar.pro. All right, so 60 Minutes. We didn't do the fifth. I'm not doing the Patriot Minute.
The Patriot Minute.
I'm jumping ahead here. when I lost my microphone, I lost my head. Maybe that's a character issue. I've got some character flaws. There's no question about it.
No.
I have a. It's interesting. There's certain things that I'm so patient with, and there's other things like tech. You know, like if my computer doesn't work, I literally want to throw it out the window. Or like my microphone was broken when we started the show. I just wanted to throw everything out the window.
You know when I get upset, Coach, when I get lost? Like when I get lost in Boston. Boston's very, I've been here for years now, but it's built on cow paths. It's very different from L.A. or New York.
Oh my God, these
one ways going the wrong way, and I always get lost, and I get frustrated, and I start yelling at somebody.
Margaret McClain, I'm a male. Look, when I get lost, I'm just a quiet little bunny rabbit. Are you kidding? Males, we don't ask for directions. We don't ask for help. I can have hours of stories of me getting lost. All right, the Constitution of the United States of America, this is the document. This is the foundation of this country. I guess if you're faith-based, I guess you think the Bible is the foundation, and I get it. I've tried to read the Bible. In the Constitution, Tom knows everything, but there were 27 amendments to the Bill of Rights. Give me one, and I'll read it.
Well, there was actually 17 to the Bill of Rights, because the Bill of Rights would technically be the first 10.
Well, that's correct.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
So smart, Tom.
Yeah.
He knows his stuff. He does.
Pick one, Tommy, and I'll read it to you.
Come on, Tommy.
Which number are you going?
Whatever you want.
Look, you're supposed to pick the number for me, and I'm supposed to tell you the amendment.
All right, I'll pick one.
Don't jump in, Margaret. It's not fair. You're college people.
I won't.
Okay, thank you.
Here we go. Amendment 16.
16. Oh, you gave him, well, 16 okay. is 16 is taxation.
Congress will. That's right. He's never wrong. Congress will have power to assess and collect taxes on income from all sources. These taxes will not be based on the census or divided proportionally between the state. And we drive on some of the best highways and roadways in the world. They have to be paid for by somebody. That's us. We're using them. So I don't have a problem with taxes. What I have a problem with is spending the money properly, not spending $820,000 on a Las Vegas party for the GSA. What, Margaret, else is this a symptom of? What other government agencies are abusing this is a hard discussion for me to have, because a couple of years ago I went around to federal and state offices and I talked to and interviewed state and federal employees. I came back amazed at how hardworking these people were. So I don't know this. I don't know if this is a story about abuse of federal or state employees, or this is abuse by management who has no checks and balances. Apparently, this Neely guy, Jeff Neely, nobody was overseeing him. He's signing his own checks.
Yeah, and I think what's going on here is they kept pushing the envelope for probably a number of years, if you really look at it. Push the envelope, and part of everybody wants to see how much they can get away with. Well, guess what? It's all great until you get caught. So I think that's what happened here. They just kept pushing that envelope.
All right, let me ask you a question.
And taxpayers' expense.
You're an ex-prosecutor. Yep. There's a bunch of subjects. So half an hour, go so fast. So let's just cover these things quickly. If we find him guilty of lying, cheating, don't you think if we hanged him from a tree, that would send a message to all federal workers?
Oh, that's pretty harsh, Coach, hanging him from a tree. I don't know.
Well,
I think that's too tough.
To hang criminals back in the turn of the century? Oregon, I think Oregon, my favorite state next to California, maybe my favorite state, used to hang in Jackson, Oregon. They've got pictures of hangings, public hangings.
Boston Common.
People hangings. Used to have picnics. They would come out and have a picnic and watch the hanging.
Well, actually, I have a story for you. A friend of mine from Norwell, where I live, his grandfather was the last judge in Massachusetts to sentence somebody by hanging. And there's an oil painting of this judge with the noose, literally, hanging in his house.
But how do we send a message?
That's a good story.
It's a great story. Incidentally, I'm reading an incredible book. Bill O'Reilly writes this book, Killing Lincoln. Tommy, when I'm done, is Tommy there?
I'm over here.
Have you read this book yet?
Have not.
You would love this book. I will give you the book to read when I'm done. Killing Lincoln. So guess where the Civil War ended? It ended at Appomattox Courthouse, right?
But I thought this was a trick question.
Right.
Well, it's not
a trick
question.
Too.
But what General Grant wanted to find a comfortable place for him to meet General Robert E. Lee, so they found a farmhouse owned by your great-great-grandfather, Wilmer McLean.
Yeah, Wilmer McLean. Actually, my daughter told me the story. They're studying the Civil War. Wilmer McLean, as the story goes, it started in his front yard or in his kitchen, and the war ended in his living room.
That's correct.
Coincidentally, in two different locations. So that's a great story, Wilmer McLean. Yeah, my great ancestor, maybe.
So.
Yeah.
Here's Margaret McLean, and her great 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 grandfather's farmhouse is where the Civil War ended. What a story! Everybody that can read should read this story of 600,000. 600,000 young men gave their lives on the Confederate side and on the Union side. Wow. It's just a... Anyway, where were we? We were down with 60 minutes. So the first thing was Wall Street. So they interview Margaret, the attorney that was appointed by the government to do the research on Lehman Brothers, right?
That's right.
And he comes back, and his findings were discussed for the first time ever, because the reason I'm guessing he was on 60 Minutes is he couldn't get anybody in government to pay attention to him, right?
That's true, as usual.
As usual. But this is, I thought my wife and I sat there shaking our heads, thinking, does anybody care about what he found? Does anybody care in Congress? Is anybody going to do anything about this report? Margaret, please tell me. Please.
Well, one thing, if it's on 60 Minutes, it sure helps. I think everybody should be aware of what happened with the Lehman Brothers scandal. And, I mean, it was part – that's why part
well,
of the reason, of course, the subprime mortgage crisis and all that.
He basically said the CEO lied, that the,
right.
the books were cooked. CFO, the controller, came to the executives and said, look, you guys are cooking the books. I'm just telling you, you're cooking the books. And then they fired him, what, 6 weeks later?
Yeah. Yeah, what else is new? They were all doing that at the time. I mean, Enron, you name it, they're all that was really part of that whole ambiance of cooking the books, seeing what we could get away with. People just like the David in David's book about character, I think they pushed the envelope just like the Secret Service and the government workers in Las Vegas pushed the envelope. Let's see how much we can get away with. And, of course, the bottom line is profit for the corporation. So, and what about, you know, talk about Walmart. Look at all the bribery that's going on in Mexico right now. Granted, that's a way of doing business in Mexico. Now we have a major presence by an American company, but millions and millions of dollars were paid out in bribes so that they could get permits. Where do we stop this? When do we say, enough? And of course, we have the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, and facilitation payments, grease payments are okay, but when it rises to the level of major bribery like Walmart did, they've got a major problem. So this was an interesting story that just broke this weekend by the New York Times.
Let's finish with Lehman.
Yeah, well, it's the same idea, though, pushing that envelope, getting away with whatever they can get away with. The bottom line is profit for that company, whether it's Lehman or Walmart.
Talking to Margaret McLean on Water Cooler Monday, also big shout-out to Joe Messina. I think, first of all, he filled in for me last week, did an incredible job. I think he has one of the best radio shows. I'm not saying this because he's a friend. His show is really, his voice on radio, his subjects are interesting, his interviewing style is superb. His name is Joe Messina. He's on every day from 2 to 4 on KKZZ. You will like, if you're not listening to him, you will like him. He has one of those voices on radio, Margaret, that just keeps you company. Does that make sense?
I listen to him every day. I'm not teaching, Coach. I'm a big fan, and I try to turn people on to Joe Messina and the Real Side here on the East Coast. That's what I'm trying to do for you guys, get you interest out here. So, Joe, you're doing a great job. Hopefully you're listening and not falling asleep on us.
No, he's a good dude. He's a good dude. All right,
I
got to
send him my book, too.
We call it Water Cooler Money. So here's the thing. I'm going to call my congressman, Gelton. Is it Gelton, Tom?
Elton.
Oh, Elton, not Gelton. It's
Gelton Allegley.
Yeah.
That's a spoonerism.
Elton Gallagher. That's his name, who I don't think he can stand me. Anyway, I'm going to call his office tomorrow. Can somebody in the United States Congress stand up and say, can somebody make an Margaret, the SEC, the Security Exchange Commission, what do they do? Here's what the attorney said last night. I don't know if you listened.
Yeah.
He said he didn't think they understood how to read the book.
Probably not.
Ernst & Young was inside the building and either turned their head or, as he said, he didn't think they could figure out what was going on.
Yeah, it's very complicated. I mean, think about it. The SEC missed Madoff, so how much weight do we give
them?
So
help me understand. These people, over 3,000 of them, are making all a pretty good living. They're on the federal government's payroll. Why are they there if they can't figure out how to interpret what the bad guys are doing? If the fox is in the chicken coop eating all the chickens, what's going to be left for us?
Exactly. Amazing story, though.
You're a prosecutor. You should be beyond upset over this.
I'm used to it by now. It's going on and on and on. It didn't really faze me watching that on 60 Minutes last night because I felt like we've already heard that story before.
All right.
Yet again.
Also on 60 Minutes, a guy has a treasure ship. Mm-hmm. He finds all these rocks and various minerals, quartz. What else did he find?
Emeralds, mostly emeralds.
Yeah,
a sea of green, remember?
Yeah, green emeralds, yeah. And then he's accused of doctoring up the emeralds.
Well, it kind of at first I thought it was very interesting, and I thought, wow, this guy, it's amazing. He went out and found all the emeralds. But then I thought it was kind of strange that the emeralds had this coating on them. I wondered if something fishing was going on.
I'm watching it like you do. He didn't project himself. I mean, would you trust this guy with your grandkids? That's all I'm asking.
No. There's something about him I didn't quite trust. I just didn't really believe his story once he got going. I thought it was awfully strange.
So there's that character thing. So there was something about him that did not portray a man of character. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
something there.
Yeah. You wonder, he was way overweight. So is somebody that's way overweight, do they have character issues or their personality issues or eating issues? What do they have?
You know what? I didn't see a problem with whether he was overweight or not. I just saw a problem with his delivery of the story.
I'm
something
overweight.
About him.
I think
maybe
flawed.
His eyes.
I'm overweight.
His eyes.
I think I'm flawed because of my weight.
Well, a lot of people have different issues with weight. It's a problem out there. But I wouldn't judge someone's character based on their weight.
Really?
No, I wouldn't.
I probably wouldn't either. So the Emerald guy, I don't know. It wasn't that interesting. I don't think the piece was produced that well.
No, I expected it to be more interesting.
Yeah, okay. All right. What's on your mind? Your book, Under Oath, comes out tomorrow. Your first book, Under Fire, did extremely well. It was the story of a Muslim lady that kills a fireman. And you like this word, under, so everything is under.
Yeah. Well, it's all about branding. So the next one's Under Treason. So it's all about branding. Yeah, but I'll tell you, I've been intrigued with the book is about Charlestown and the Code of Silence murders, which it's based on a true story. Charlestown is a small Irish Catholic close-knit neighborhood of Boston. Boston is composed of all these little neighborhoods. So I lived in Charlestown for a while, and I was a yuppie. I was working in the city, but living in Charlestown. I was a member of the Charlestown Community Garden, so I felt like I got a feel for it. And here I was during this huge Code of Silence murder trial from 1975 to 1992. Charlestown, which is only 1 square mile, population 15,000 people, had the highest unsolved murder rate in the country. There were no witnesses. There were no arrests. I really got involved with it. I would hear about it all the time, but what really impacted me was one day coming home from work, I would always pass by this guy, this townie, they would call them, working-class Irish, would say hello to me. I'd say he was maybe in his mid-50s. Every day I'd say hello to him. He'd say hello to me, and I'd be on my way, and I'd go to my apartment at the time. And I was very young, in my late 20s, before I was married. So one day he wasn't there anymore. 3 days later, the police come. It's about midnight. Place is surrounded. Turns out he'd been dead for 3 days. He was murdered. I talked to the detectives. He said, did you see anything out of the ordinary? No, I really hadn't. But I could see it in the detective's eyes. I could hear it in his voice, how frustrated he was with dealing with this code of silence and these 33 unsolved murders where people don't hear anything, they don't say anything, and you never talk to cops. So I saw this frustration, and then I started researching it. I was working up in Lawrence as a young prosecutor at the time, so I really wanted to get a feel for what this community was all about, what this code of silence was, and what ultimately broke the code of silence murders were this group of women called Mothers Against Murder, Charlestown After Murder Program, and they finally stood up to the code of silence, and it was a very big sensational case, so that's what the book is all about. And I fictionalize it a little bit, but I really interviewed these people, spent many, many years with some of the mothers and the cops, and really got their stories. So I'm very, very, very excited for Under Oath to come out tomorrow.
Nicely said. Now,
thank you.
how about here's something? How about Mommies for Romney? Mommies for Romney.
A book about that? I don't think so. We don't have the murder, the intrigue, the courtroom drama. You know, that's what I. You know, well, if you heard the news today at the top of the hour. They talked about three cases, Trayvon Martin, the Jennifer Hudson case. She's testifying in her brother's murder. And they talked about another one. Oh, Roger Clemens. Think of the drama in the courtroom. So that's what I love to talk about is the emotion, the drama, the setting. That's what my books are all about. You asked me, and I'm just so excited about this book. I had to kind of start talking about it.
I
hope you like it.
Because I just love hearing your voice, you know.
Well, it was an interesting question, but I think people really want to hear about how were these unsolved murders that went on from 1975 to 1992, how did they ever break this code of silence? So what we have now, too, is I've co-written a play based on the book, and it's going on in New York, and we really get a feel for this courtroom drama on the stage and what that code of silence is all about. So I hope to bring that all over the country soon, too.
In a serious – nobody's listening to our show. So in a serious,
oh, yes, they are. I have listeners.
Well, you do. In a serious vein here, it takes – I have to work myself up to send a thank you note, to write a thank you note and then stick it in an envelope and then write on the outside of the envelope and then get a stamp and all that stuff. I don't stick thank you note envelopes through our stamp machine. I actually buy stamps and put them on.
Sure.
There's something about when you get an envelope and there's a real stamp on there versus something by stamp by a stamp machine. But how do you write? When do you write? I mean, you have three kids. They're all teenagers. When do you like write at two in the? How do you write?
I try to find a little bit of time every day to write. As soon as I put them on the bus, I will go and sit down at my computer and write all day. I've been very distracted lately with, of course, It's a Crime Radio, trying to prepare for that. I've got 100 students at Boston College. And this play in New York, I keep having to go back and forth, so that's a full-time job. But it's important as an author, especially these days, to establish a brand. So now I have Product, which is the two books, and I'm working a little bit to establish that brand, get my name out there, and as soon as the summer kicks in, I'm going to have to go back to writing every day. You have to write every day. Anna Quinlan actually had a great column this week in the Wall Street Journal. She starts out by saying, "I hate to write."
I saw her.
And I looked at that, and I said, amen. Yeah, she's a famous writer.
I saw her.
Amen.
She was on CBS this morning. Incidentally,
she's promoting the book. Of course, she's got a brand. She's promoting the book. If you can just let me finish the one thought. What she does is she writes during the day, and then she quits. No, no, just quickly. What she does, for any writers out there listening, is she will stop mid-sentence, stop writing, and then the next day finish that sentence and keep going. It's very important because it's hard. You asked me how I was able to write these books and do all these other things. Well, it's the idea of you have to keep going, you have to write every day, and that's excruciating as an author to do that. And I thought her advice was wonderful. Any authors out there, go look that look Wall Street Journal, Anna Quinlan. It was a great advice for authors.
How far is Portland, Maine from where you are?
Oh, it's pretty far.
Well,
it's a long...
Fox...
Oh, Portland, Maine. It's not that far. I'm sorry. I was thinking
Oregon. My
friend owns
the Fox station up there. He wants to put you on television.
I would love it.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I've been doing legal analysis for NECN. So anytime they have a leading legal issue like the Trayvon Martin case, the Mattapan quadruple murder, I'll go on the morning show, and I got some new outfits. I've got five new dresses, Coach. So I love television. I will do it anytime.
Can you send me some pictures, please?
Yeah, I'll send some clips, I would definitely go up there.
I want to see in all five outfits. Fox 23, check them out, Fox 23.
Excellent, I will.
He wants to put you on television.
Coach,
yeah.
Can I play what I would like to hear the theme song be for Margaret's show?
Yeah.
Margaret, you
ready?
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Hang on.
I like it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. That's great.
That's
fabulous, Tommy. We're
going to
have... Yes, yes, yes. You know what? I love it. Let's do it.
It's a fabulous Sade, by the way.
Oh, I love it.
Tommy's got a crush on you, like Joe Messina. Both of them.
Oh, stop it.
Both of them
no,
are trying to buy tickets to Boston as we speak. Hey,
I'm going to send them Boston Bruins. Wait, wait, wait. This is really important, Coach. Go Bruins. Go Bruins. Go Bruins. Stanley Cup Game 7 on Wednesday. I'm going to send you hats if we win. How's that?
Let me say this. We're in L.A. King country, honey.
I don't care.
This is King country. save your hats for people in Boston. Couple of minutes left on what we call Water Cooler Monday. Your name is Margaret McLean, her new book, Under Oath. Look, if you like CSI, you like all these legal shows, which I don't. I don't watch any of them. You'd like her book. She's a great writer. This is her third book. She's now starting to go down that. What's that famous other legal guy that wrote, made $100 million?
John Grisham?
Yeah, John Grisham.
Are you the one of the reviews?
Are you the female John Grisham?
Well, one of the reviews recently came in and said, move the Grishams aside.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, if somebody would listen to your show on Thursday and they hear,
yeah.
I talk over you, and I've got narcissistic issues, so I'm Michelle Skeen, my shrink, is trying to help me with my narcissism, but your show on Thursday at 1, the way that you tell stories is very, very interesting. You're a storyteller.
Well, that's what I'm born to do, I guess, tell stories on the radio or tell stories on paper. It's easier on the radio. I don't have to sit there and be writing stuff and trying to figure out what to say next.
Now, my granddaughter, who knows I'm on the radio every day, just texts me, and she wants to do a FaceTime with me.
Oh, that sounds fun.
I can't give out her name for legal and security reasons, but she wants to FaceTime with me.
Hey, Tommy, I have listeners that are texting me right now. See, we have listeners on the East Coast here, everybody. And they're saying they love that theme song for It's a Crime.
Excellent.
So,
we'll roll shot it out for you. Mm-hmm.
We'll work out some kind of financial plan, and you can use it, you know.
Yeah.
All right, so we got a couple minutes left. So what else? We were going to talk about the Sonny, what's his name? Bulger? What's happening there?
Oh, the Whitey Bulger case.
Oh, Whitey Bulger. Was he in Charlestown?
Yeah, if you...
Was he in Charlestown?
He was very similar to... he was in South Boston, which was very similar to the Code of Silence, that close-knit Irish neighborhood. And he's a mobster, very similar to the guy that I have standing trial in my book. So I took a lot of that fear that he had everybody in fear. And, yes, the Code of Silence was very strong in South Boston.
Well,
so that trial is coming up.
Here's the thing. I just got to rant on this. We spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on putting this old man away, and we can't spend a dollar on putting these Wall Street criminals who stole billions from us. I mean,
we put them away.
Huh?
Hey, we put some of them away, absolutely.
Well, oh, come on. Who have we put away?
Ken Lay, we put a lot of those Enron guys away.
That's not the guys that were tricking us into buying all these insurance, whatever you call them.
Mortgages.
Your profession, the legal profession. Where are the people that have the character to stand up and do what's right for this country and what's right for the people? The legal profession should be standing up and saying something. This attorney had the guts to go on 60 Minutes last night and say, hey, Lehman Brothers were cooking the books. Lehman Brothers lied. The CEO lied.
Right. Well, absolutely. And I'm sure charges will be brought in that case. You know, and the government is kind of catching up here, is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh? So we'll see it.
Doesn't bother
we'll see
you.
It. Nothing. No, it doesn't bother me.
Nothing bothers you.
I've seen it all. Trust me, I've seen it all. I've prosecuted hundreds and hundreds of cases and have absolutely seen it all. So that's why I write about it.
What music are they playing now?
Oh, I don't know.
Tommy?
Oh, it's only background stuff.
Good.
Do not pay attention to the music behind the microphone.
All right, so good luck on your book. Thank you.
Thank you.
For being with me on Mondays. I love having you be with me. And are you going, your play, did you write this play?
Yeah, I co-wrote it. Yep. Actually,
wow.
Yeah, the My co-author is a movie, an A-list movie producer, wonderful writer. He's very involved with the Actors Studio, so it's in development with the Actors Studio. We have a wonderful performance coming up. It's going to be moderated by Patricia Bosworth of Vanity Fair. So it's just a wonderful New York experience, and that's where I was all week working on the play. We work on it nonstop, especially when it comes this close to production.
Margaret, can I ask you a question?
I can't wait for you to see it. Sure.
Since it is the Actors Studio, what's your favorite swear word? Never mind.
I can't say it on the radio.
I was just trying to channel what's his name.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have an Actors Studio in California, so I will try to get something going out there so you guys can see it.
California's one big Actors Studio. What are you talking about?
Can't you film? Seriously, if you film the play, I'll put it on the website. Can't you film the play?
We're not allowed to.
We're
not allowed to bring any cameras whatsoever into the Actors Studio.
Oh, my God, Margaret.
Well, it's not my rule.
You can't take a little flip camera and do a little stuff for Tommy and I?
I wish. They're very strict, and I don't want to blow that.
That must be character. That must be a sign of character.
Character. That's a sign of character.
So
there you go.
Obviously, you can't film it because they want you to come and pay the money and watch it.
There's no money. In the Actors Studio, it's... I can't explain it, but it's... It's a place, a special place in both New York and California where plays are developed and will ultimately, hopefully, make it to Broadway or off Broadway or one of the good stages. I mean, we've been working on it for 4 years.
It'd be fun. I'd love to interview somebody in the studio just on Mondays with you for half an hour. These are different kinds of people, right? These are artisans. These are very creative people. These people find a way to give back to society through plays, right? Through dramas.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand these people, and I just want to find out, you know, because I don't.
Well, the Actors Studio has quite a history. They going way back. I'll send you the history on the Actors Studio. As a matter of fact, the next show I'll share with the listeners a little bit about the history of the Actors Studio and what we do there. That's what I'll do for you guys. Picture paints,
but
words.
I'm in a suit and tie world, so I'd love to just do that. If you can arrange maybe in the next month or so, that'd be very cool.
Sounds good.
All right, Margaret, thank you, my dear.
You're welcome.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow and the rest of the week, the coach will be on live from 4 to 6 on KKZZ. Thank you for taking your time to listen. Thank you for being patient. You can check us out on the website, AM1400Coach, AM1400Coach. And I do workshops on helping people do a better job of thinking. If you can think better in your life, you'll get better results. If you get better results, it leads to a higher self-confidence. A higher self-confidence leads to real self-esteem. And when you can trust yourself, ladies and gentlemen, you can learn to trust other people. So I do these workshops. And that's why I was in Vegas last week doing two. And thanks for putting up with me. I'll see you tomorrow live on KKZZ AM 1400 here in Southern California.
Thanks, Tommy and Barry.